Everyone on this beautiful spring day. This is the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations. This is our regular May meeting. I would just remind folks that we are being recorded and we're also live on CTN this morning. So we welcome them as well. Just as a reminder about protocols, if you wish to be recognized for comment or questions, hit the raise hand function on at the bottom of your screen, and you'll be recognized. Otherwise, if you're speaking, you can take your video. Or make yourself visible. It would be helpful, a good way to put it, to the rest of the world if you're so inclined to ask questions or participate. I know we have Jennifer Berrigan, who is here as an alternate for Rick Hart, who indicated he wasn't going to be able to be with us at today's meeting. I know there was someone else who let us know that they weren't going to be able to. Mayor LeClerc also was not going to be with us this morning. He's normally a regular participant. But otherwise, we have a quorum. So I think we can continue on with our agenda.
Brendan, if I may, I'm going to be sitting in for Ron today until he arrives.
Terrific. Thank you. On behalf of CCN. Thanks, Brian. Moving on to our agenda for today, we have a number of items and updates that we need to provide. We'll obviously be getting into a little bit more detail. We'll be having a good conversation, hopefully, under item five, one that we started last month. And due to some scheduling conflicts, we were not able to discuss the item 5A in subcommittee later last month. So I'd like to revive that conversation for today's meeting. But other than that, I think I'll move on to item three on our agenda, which is approval of the April 9th meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
I move they be accepted. John Elsesser.
John, second, Lyle Ray.
Lyle Ray for a second. Are there any comments or proposed changes? Okay, if not, let me try your minds. All those in favor of the minutes as drafted from May 9th, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I think there's an abstention, Mr. Chair, on the chat.
Okay, thank you for pointing that out. And also, yes, right. So Leah will be abstaining. Leah Grenier will be abstaining because Kathy Dempsey was not at the last meeting. So thanks for pointing that out, Lyle. And I'm remiss because I failed to introduce our intrepid vice chair of the ACI. I'll introduce myself, actually. But our vice chair, of course, is Lyle Ray from the Capital Region Council of Governments. And I am Brendan Sharkey, the chair of ACIR. The next item on our agenda is item four, which is the annual report and 2021 work plan. I know that, Bruce, you've sent out the draft of the annual report for everyone's consideration. And maybe as we do many months, if you can just update us on what our status is with regard to both of these items so everyone's familiar with what we need to be doing going forward on this.
Okay, just a quick overview. This report has come up a couple times in previous meetings. It's required by statute, but without a hard deadline. So the group is free to take their time in reviewing it, but given that it includes a work plan for 2021 and 2021 is now one third past us. It may be time to go ahead and adopt it. One thing I want to highlight for everyone is that on page 6 of the annual report, I had highlighted a question. There was a paragraph in there identifying work by the ACIR and others, and I had asked if you wanted to include the report of a few years ago by the Commission on Fiscal Stability and Economic Growth. Many of you will remember there was a presentation to the ACIR about their work. I don't believe any ACIR members directly participated in it, but this listing of reports is not intended to just focus on those that ACIR members participated in. At least one of you has chimed in earlier this year to say that you believe that should be included, but I would just leave that to the group, if the group is going to adopt the report today, to decide whether you would want to include that in the list of efforts that have looked into things regarding efficiency, sharing, et cetera, et cetera.
Bruce, if I could interrupt you just for a sec. Lyle, as the host of this Zoom meeting, would you be so kind as to enable my ability to share my screen?
Yeah.
I actually have that up on my elsewhere on my computer.
Let me just try to figure this out here.
I think actually it's good. I think you just did it.
I think I've done it.
There you go. So if folks can see this, this is in context, this is page 6 of the I'll start from the beginning here, that's already been drafted. This is our annual report and work plan that has been prepared by Bruce for our consideration. And the page 6 to which Bruce was referring before is right here. And this is the section that Bruce was referring to regarding previous studies that have gone before our efforts. I'm inclined, if I might speak on behalf of, well, I don't know who I'm on behalf of myself, I guess. I think it does make sense to include that additional study on the Commission on Fiscal Stability and Economic Growth. I don't know if anyone else has any other thoughts on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Scott,
sure. Yeah.
I concur. I mean, it offers a single location for a number of different studies. And the fact that we didn't actually do it isn't going to be of import when someone looks back a couple of years from now and sees, you know, all of them in one place. So I think we should.
Sure. John Filchek?
Thank you. I would agree to place it in there, but I think given the scope of recommendations and that are in that report, that we have some footnote or whatever that the inclusion of this does not necessarily constitute an endorsement or an agreement with all of the recommendations and findings within that report. I know many of us spent a lot of time on that, testified with legislation and followed it along. And I don't want it to just sit there as a report title with an implication that somehow we are endorsing that. It's an important report, and it should be in there, but I think we should qualify that in some fashion.
Well, would it make sense along those lines, John, if maybe in that last, as an initial clause to that last sentence in the paragraph where my cursor is pointing, that we just add a clause that suggests while the ACIR is not specifically endorsing any of these studies, these are potentially worthwhile changes have been identified in each, but implementation lags. Does that be a...
Chair, I would agree with that because I don't think we actually endorse any of these things.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's right.
So
yeah.
It's not just the fiscal stability one. I don't think we've endorsed... we certainly didn't endorse the governor's transition task force, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, well, I agree with your suggestion.
The task force on to promote shared municipal services that went to the legislative group was endorsed. That report came from ACIR.
Yeah.
Okay.
The others did not, but.
Right.
And I happen to be the chair along with Rick Orth, who has since joined us for at least two of those other reports. And I would recommend that you not endorse those other two studies. I'm kidding. That's a joke. Jennifer, you had your hand raised.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize if I'm weighing in a little bit late. I wasn't expecting to be here today, and I'm just reading this report as you're bringing it up here. And so I would ask that we remove the proposal here, the question to add the Commission on Fiscal Stability and Economic Growth report, as it encompasses far more than the issues that this group is charged with discussing. And in fact, I'd say there's probably a fair amount of disagreement on any number of those issues contained in that report. And I respectfully ask that we do not make that inclusion. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer. Other thoughts? While I'm sharing my screen, I'm scanning the attendees to see if there are any other comments or thoughts on that. So what's the consensus on this? I think one suggestion has been to include it but qualify it. One is to exclude it. A couple others are to add it. So what's our consensus on this?
I would qualify. I would include and qualify.
Can I just make a comment?
Sure.
As a new member to this work, I found having that included in there was helpful to provide me with some background context. And if we have the qualifier in there, I think it allows for other people who are new to this work to have a context and background that could be valuable as we move this forward. So, and like I said, because I'm new, it's just, it's a different perspective.
Sure. Jennifer, if we had that qualifying clause, and I don't know if we specifically want to identify the fiscal stability study as being qualified or just in general a qualifier. Would that satisfy your concerns?
I'm sorry, no, it wouldn't. And again, I did not anticipate being here this morning, so I'd like an opportunity to actually go back to that report. And I think everyone here, if they haven't, should take a moment to go back to that report, because if I remember correctly, it also calls for a lot of austerity measures, disinvestment in things that would be important to a lot of folks on this call. Millions of dollars, I think 100 million, if I remember, in budget cuts was proposed in this report. Again, I'd want to go back and refer to it directly before being more specific, but there are also a number of anti-labor provisions of recommendations made in this report. And if we're going to continue to have a cooperative, collaborative labor management relationship on this committee, I would respectfully request that if there are components of this report that the group supports, that those components be named specifically and this report in the aggregate not be mentioned.
Okay. Martin, you had your hand raised.
Yeah, thank you. I think, this paragraph, I read it differently as this talks about the work that's been done about achieving effective and efficient services and talks about the report. The very first line of it says work by ACIR or by others. I mean, that could be clarified, but it's just listing the reports that are out there. I mean, we could say the same, and Jennifer, I completely, understand your points, but other members could say the same thing about the War Commission, that they don't agree with certain aspects of it. anything else. It's not saying that ACIR supports any of these. It's just showing the different regional reports that have been done and identifying them. It says nothing in this paragraph about ACIR supporting every concept of this in here. And maybe we just need some better clarifying language for that, because all these reports, there's only, you know, one report in there that ACIR worked on, which was a task force, you know, in full. That is our report. The others are all done by other areas. And we're not saying that ACIR supports all of these or all the individual pieces of them. We're just sharing that there is a number of reports out there for reference on this. So that's my take on this paragraph.
Bob?
I would agree with Martin and others. I think it's important to have the information out there. Having complete information, whether we endorse or agree, is important for whomever it is that wants to read this. And I think, you know, in our charge as ACIR, I think we need to explore all opportunities. It doesn't mean we endorse all opportunities, but this is just for informational purposes. And I don't think we do any harm by doing that.
Okay. Brian.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to, you know, without reiterating everything, agree with Martin and Bob on this. I think if just a further suggestion is maybe the qualifier also include the Moore Commission and the recommendations of the shared and regional services. So it's not just that one report, like all these, it's not an endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's along the lines of what I was recommending. Right. All right. John Elsesser.
Thank you. I think, you know, the last sentence, potentially worthwhile changes have been identified. I think that should be modified to just say these are worthwhile sources to as reference documents to see the work that has been studied before. But by saying worthwhile changes have been identified, I think you're giving judgment value to all of those, which is an agreement. So I would just say, you know, that to modify that last sentence to say provided, you know, past studies that show possible areas that have been identified versus making that judgment call. And I think it is important to say implementation lags, because I think that's a factual statement.
Yeah, I think there's consensus around that for sure. I'm just focusing on folks who have not spoken yet. Jim.
Yeah, I agree with John. I think we should avoid any judgment sentences. And I also agree with Bob and Martin. Seems like a good idea to reference all of this material. It's all public information. So. It's a good spot to make that available to everybody, and they can agree or disagree.
Okay. And Jen, I'll come to you last. Let me just let John, and then you can, looks like it's you and John with some additional comments. John, Phil Check.
My suggestion here would be, since there's only one report within this paragraph that's an ACIR one, which is the task force, which is addressed in the following paragraph, that be removed. And we just focus on other reports within this. I would also suggest we add the CCM report. This is something new or something different. I forget the title, because that's an important report too on regional services. I don't think we're limiting ourselves just to legislative actions here, and I think that should be highlighted. I go back and forth on the Commission on Fiscal Stability, because, yeah, I honestly haven't re-reviewed it in a couple of, you know, since a couple of years, it seems, and there's an awful lot in there that, I think we need a qualifier on that, because there is going to be legitimate disagreement within this group. There's legitimate disagreement I have with it. But nonetheless, it's a major report, and I don't think we can ignore it. So that would be my suggestion, is take the actual ACIR report, remove it from this, and just have it say, here's other reports that address, achieving more efficient, effective public services. And I would add the CCM report as well.
Great. That's a good thought. Jennifer.
Thank you. I appreciate Mr. Filczyk's suggestion. So maybe when that's written, that might alleviate many concerns. I again would suggest that this commission's report, I can't recall a more divisive report, a more divisive product to be issued by a task force, a government appointed body in my career in Connecticut. So to refer to it as it does in this earlier paragraph as effective, efficient, and responsive, I take, in the folks I represent would take real issue with that. I think it was divisive. It promoted disinvestment, which I don't think anyone here supports. And, one of the more famous takeaways from that task force proceeding, or that commission's proceedings, was one member in particular repeating this mantra that we must protect the wealthy. And while that, I'm not here to litigate that comment here today, but I think that frames kind of the beginning point of the report and justifies the level of disinvestment that this commission recommended. So again, I appreciate Mr. Filczyk's recommendation. Our preference would be to have this removed altogether. I don't think it's productive. I don't think it recommended anything effective or efficient. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Okay. So if maybe I could make this suggestion that we'll table this item for a vote until our next meeting, but in the meantime, work through that paragraph. Maybe we can consult with some of our members to make sure that we are accurately reflecting the members' intent on this. So if that makes sense to folks, maybe we can do that. We'll table it for now, not put it to a vote, but work on that particular paragraph. Bruce, thank you for actually making a point of highlighting that for everyone's to see, because otherwise that, it might have otherwise been missed in the course of approving the general overall plan that you've drafted, and you've done a terrific job in doing. So thank you for that. Is there consensus on that? That let's take this off the table for now, and we'll work on this paragraph to reflect everyone's attention and vote on next week, or next month, I should say. Is that anyone opposed to that idea? Okay. All right, scanning through. All right, so I will stop sharing my screen now. There we go. Okay, thank you all. That was, I think, a helpful conversation as a reminder of where we've been and where we're going. So moving on to item number 5 on our agenda, which is the Local Government of the Future Initiative, LGF. I wanted to just alert everyone to the fact that we are still awaiting, and I was just looking to just check the General Assembly's work done yesterday in terms of the bills passed yesterday. But I know that our bill, which is House Bill 6448, I say our bill, it's the governor's bill, in which we have our RPIP 2.0 proposal included, that is still on the House calendar, unless it was acted on yesterday. I'm sorry that I didn't double check it before today's meeting. But that looks like it's on the road towards passage without too much controversy. So we're looking forward to that. That has been, was a really worthwhile endeavor that ACIR embarked on last fall, and it's now actually, oh, thanks, Brian. Brian's reporting that it was not acted on yesterday. So hopefully between now and actually our next meeting at the beginning of June, it will be. So we'll keep you apprised of that.
Mr. Chair, can I just some added info on that, on Bill 6448?
Yes, Mark.
So, yeah, it has not been acted upon. Obviously, if you've looked at the bill, there's multiple sections in it. So this, the ACIR piece, if you will, is one section, and there's a section for the COGS, and then there's a section for the meeting requirements and everything else. We are working with legislature, you know, on that meeting requirement portion of the bill. So that's why there's been no action yet, because if, obviously, as everyone probably knows, there's like six or seven bills out there for how do we move forward with this after we come out of executive orders and everything else. So all of that is kind of in discussion for that section of the bill, but there has not been, you know, any other, you know, discussion regarding the ACIR piece. So just wanted to update everybody on that.
Thanks, Martin. And I'll just editorialize by saying that I was made acutely aware of that other section of the bill when I testified in front of the Planning and Development Committee, because not a single question was about the ACIR proposal. I was being asked as former speaker, don't you think that these are horrible provisions or great provisions? And I wasn't prepared to really talk about that. So, so yeah, that was a little bit of a rude awakening. But yeah, thanks, Martin, for that context. That was helpful. So the actual agenda item 5A of our agenda involves the historical reports that ACIR has done in the past regarding home rule. I would like to talk about this a little bit more, and I'll just recap for those who were not with us last month. This was a suggestion that was raised by a couple of members who have pointed out that some of the current conversations about looking at our zoning our zoning laws here in Connecticut have appropriated the term home rule as a basis for their, in most cases, their opposition to any changes to zoning. And I think to zoning regulations happening at the local level. And while folks may differ certainly on the content of a lot of that discussion that's going on right now, I think the term home rule has been, it has been pointed out by several members that that has been misappropriated by those who would otherwise be in opposition to some of these proposed changes. Specifically, the notion that home rule empowers a town to do whatever they want. And as has been pointed out by Lyle and John and others, you know, that's not the way Connecticut is set up. We have, as Lyle has given us the historical background on this, as far as how Connecticut, unlike other states, is set up, all power at the local level is derived from the state. It's not that we empower states to do their own thing, so to speak. And so the discussion went to within ACIR at last month's meeting was on the question of whether ACIR should affirmatively go back to some of its own reports on the history of home rule dating back as far as 1987. Good substantive reports, which are actually highlighted in our agenda today and are available online at our website, Bruce, if I'm not mistaken, that really provide the historical and legal background for where home rule actually lands within our constitutional structure here in the state. And the question that was suggested or raised was whether ACIR should revisit those reports and update them and produce some re-explanation of what the law is and whether the term home rule really means what some folks may think it means, and maybe disabuse those who may be misusing it. With that in mind, we were planning to have a subcommittee meeting to address this, which was to be held last week. And unfortunately, I know I had a scheduling conflict, and I think it turned out it was bad timing. So we didn't bring it up in subcommittee, but we are kind of bringing it back onto the agenda this month for further conversation about how to proceed on this. It's not something we're going to be able to do in a month or two. It's probably going to take some work on the part of a subgroup of this entity to really put some flesh on that. I've also been contacted by folks who have noticed our discussions on this, who are skilled on municipal law and some of the history on this. I won't name names at this point, but, you know, who are interested in helping the ACIR consider this new look or a second look at the topic. And if folks are comfortable with that, I'm thinking we might want to proceed down that course, either in a formal subcommittee way or just establish our own working group within. So do we have any thoughts or comments on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, I think it's important. I've, you know, raised this issue a couple of meetings ago, and reviewing the 1987 report, I don't know if updating that, but revisiting this with, if we have those resources that you just mentioned, plus the membership here, I think would be of great value. I found going through the report and looking especially at the findings and recommendations up on starting on page 29, and clearly most of these haven't been acted on, and you can see some of the validity, and I question some of the stuff because I'm not sure what the context was, but I think this is a very important study for us to take on, especially with this discussion around zoning and other matters as they come up. I think we do need clarity, and if we can aid in that, I think would be quite beneficial.
Yeah, I agree. Lyle?
Yeah, I would just add to John's points. This is quintessential ACIR material. You know, it's about state-local relations and the legal framework and how it applies to land use and other things. I think it's absolutely in our bailiwick, and I think we need to consider it. My encouragement would be for us to come up with something snappy and relatively short, and not to repeat the tomes of the past, but just, you know, the basic definitions, the fact that we're a Dillon rule state, what that means, and how that might be applied. So my suggestion is, I say, this is right in our wicket, and suggest we proceed. And how you want to do it is, you know, obviously up for discussion among the group. But I think it's because it's become timely and has surfaced a lot, and I think CCM would have an interest in this, as well as cost and individual towns, just to sort of go over this so that we don't have repetitions of things of what local control means that are not potentially accurate. So that would be my suggestion to add to John's.
Thanks, Lyle, and thanks also for your reference to wickets and bailiwicks.
I'm watching too much British television, I think.
Right, exactly.
And this one is a bit of a sticky wicket.
Ah, excellent. Yes. Well, true that.
And, it is. Whatever that means.
I also wanted just to add, and it picks up off the discussion we had with the Office of Fiscal Analysis, and where we really discovered that when they look at the fiscal impact on towns and cities, that there's a true deficiency there in terms of what the actual impacts are on different size municipalities. One of the things they point out in the 87 report is the lack of clarity on legislative intent. And I know, going back to my days as a lobbyist, I was always very careful and was sort of a general rule of lobbyists in those days of you needed to get a legislator to spell out why you're doing the bill. as I've seen things evolve over the last 30 years there, a lot of legislation gets piled up towards the end, and, you know, it just gets passed quickly without a lot of discussion, or it gets into the implementer bill. So there's really no intent behind it. So when the courts have to look back at it and say, well, what was the discussion? What was the intent? There is no discussion, so they have to go off the plain language. And so I agree with Lyle in that it would be nice to have something quick, you know, brief and understandable, but there are some bigger issues there that we may be recommending to the legislature that they, for legislation that impacts municipalities, it needs to go through a process where the actual intent and impact is understood better and articulated.
Well, just to add to that, I think that's a good hygiene for any law. You know, in previous lives, I was in places where we were poring over legislative tapes to, you know, talk about legislative intent. Not a good idea. And that happens in a lot of states because the intent is, you know, in a 4-hour hearing where there's all kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, at the end, it's, you know, all those members of favor say aye, you know, and I'm like, well, I think that makes a lot of sense. But I think that the core point, however the commission wants to do this, is I think the idea of clarifying home rule, what it means and how it applies to current issues, I think is a very important piece. Just to reiterate, because it hasn't been done for a while. But the underlying law hasn't changed. I guess the point I'm making is the underlying laws, you know, the Dillon's rule and other things haven't changed. I mean, so it's not like there's been in many other areas like information technology, you know, like 5 years ago is ancient history. This is not. And this is constitutional law, as you understand from your training, Brendan. But I think it would be very useful to have, and John's points are good too. There's a variety of other suggestions, but at least a clear statement of what that means in terms of under the 1987 and other reports, you know, what is local? A home rule, rather, and what does that mean in terms of local discretion? And as one more point, I think that doesn't mean that the state can't delegate, which is a whole other story, which is in many states, not here, in many states, localities are delegated things like transportation, procurement of land, and all kinds of other things. But the state has decided they want to give those duties and powers to the towns to get something done. But it's still, you know, the state's control to do it. But again, I would argue on both sides, which is there's a lot less local control than people think because of Dillon's rule. At the same time, I think the state may want to consider delegating to regions and towns a lot of stuff. And a good example of this is right-of-way. When we did the right-of-way for CT Fast Track, it was a very long and painful process. And I think it could have been facilitated if they simply said to the along the 10 miles, you know, the towns doing it could do some of the acquisition and save some time. So this is not to say that everything needs to be centralized, which is, I think, where people misread this is there's two choices, home rule or vicious centralization. That's not true. There's a lot of delegation and decentralization can happen and makes a huge amount of sense to clear smaller tasks off of the state desk. Let the state deal with big stuff, but they really ought not to be dealing with alignments for, you know, a walkway through a swamp in Farmington at great painful length for 5 years. That's not a good use of state resources. So anyway, decentralization and delegation are definitely part of the Dillon's rule. So it's not people falsely perhaps misunderstand this as either you give home rule to towns or you have this very tough centralization. That's a false dichotomy. So maybe more than you want to hear about, but it's not necessary to have that rigid centralization at all.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, fair enough. And you've very articulately described what the crux of the misunderstandings may be. Yeah, Lon, I see your hand raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback on what was just said in that, you know, as a Board of Education member, we're often on the receiving end of bills with good intentions that have very expensive outcomes, which was kind of the topic of our OFA discussion. And, you know, I think on top of that, it would help us at the municipal level to help our voters better understand where the demarcation line is between what we have authority over and what we need to comply with. That said, I also think there's an opportunity in this report to open the door for more innovation coming up from the municipalities that could benefit the whole state. Because more often than not, you know, we're doing really interesting, unique things in our own communities and nobody ever hears about it. So I think that if we can start looking at this issue in a way that is not, you know, favoring one position on a particular item versus another, but in fact, kind of defining what our local governance structure is. And I do think, despite the fact that we often hear very negative things about local control, I think there's a lot of opportunity for innovation and incubation of good governance ideas that I think could benefit everybody. And I think, you know, kind of redefining that would be very helpful, because I've seen, as you've all heard me speak ad nauseum over the course of the many years we've been together, we've often been limited by, you know, the state telling us we can't do things in an innovative way. And I've seen over the last year, especially in education, some incredibly creative thinking going on within our schools and many of the other schools around the state to be able to deal with a very difficult health crisis. So I think this is a very good, timely report, and I'm happy to be helpful with it.
Thanks, Lon. And I know you, one of the disadvantages of jumping in late was I wanted to let you know that because we're being recorded live on CTN, when folks are offering comments, if they can open up their screen so those watching can at least attach a name with a face going forward.
Sorry about that. I'm in a baseball cap because I'm cleaning up my office today.
Yeah, I right.
That was a conscious decision.
That's something I'm completely unfamiliar with. Yes, given the fact that I'm wearing shorts today. So, full disclosure. Rick, I'm sorry, you were also interested in offering a comment.
Just a quick comment. I agree with Lyle that this is what ACIR is for. It's fundamental to, I think, our ACIR's charge to help people better understand what the law is and how we're constituted in the way we are, state to local. So it seems totally appropriate to me. Also, though, to Lyle's comment, there's a lot of in between extreme central control and total home rule. And I don't know if this is an ACIR area of responsibility, but is there a way to help this ongoing debate about land use and zoning, in addition to clarifying what the current constitution and foundational law of Connecticut is with regard to home rule? I hope I haven't just complicated things, but ultimately I wish someone could help us all understand better what the relationship is between state and local government when it comes to things like zoning and land use.
Well, I'll speak for myself on that. I think that really is a subtext for why it's important that we do this study about the relative relationship between state and local as to, you know, what towns are empowered to do and adopt and what they are not, and what role the state might play in promoting a policy, whatever it may be, and having the towns follow that policy as part of the state's authority to do that, and clarifying those relative roles. Before, I think you joined us a couple of months ago, Rick. I guess it was about 4 or 5 months ago now. We did hear from Desegregate Connecticut and Sarah Bronin, who presented to our group what their plans are. I know Kyle Abercrombie's on the call with us today as well, to kind of explain what their approach is with regard to specifically with regard to zoning reform. You know, the ACIR took no position on whether, you know, for or against the DSEG Connecticut efforts and legislative proposals. But I think it was not only informative for us, but also I think what we've learned from those efforts is precisely what John is talking about. which is that in terms of helping to clarify these roles and responsibilities between the two levels of government here in the state. So I think de facto it's going to be helpful to the discussion if we get clarity as to, you know, what those roles are one way or the other. And regardless of how you come down on the specific recommendations being made, at least you are, we're all working off the same playbook, if you will, and have a common understanding of what the rules are, what the law is, and what the relative roles are. That's my personal take. Jim, you have your hand raised.
You're muted.
Yeah, you're muted, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Just going back to Lyle's original comment, it does seem as though we need a relatively concise statement of the differences that exist, let's say, across the country vis-a-vis the Connecticut rule, the rule. So a concise statement would be very worthwhile. But going on from that, I'm with John. Seems like this is a very, Scott hit the nail on the head. It's a sticky wicket, for sure. And so, a good starting point, I think, would be to take a look at the, recommendations in that original ACIR report. I think there were some excellent recommendations back then, and I'd be hard pressed. I don't think that any of those recommendations ever saw the light of day. So to the extent that we could drop back and begin again, I mean, I'm sure there would be other recommendations that would come forward, but those recommendations are a good starting point.
Good. Yeah, thanks, Jim. I agree. Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think that the study is very important, and I think we all need to make a real effort in that area. We have, and you know, as former speaker, we just have such difficulty acting as a state. We are the size of a county in California or Texas, and we just can't seem to identify with each other as a single entity. We identify as either 169 or 100 years ago, I worked in Groton, and we identified by what fire district you were in. Very difficult. I've been very pleased with the state of Connecticut's response to the pandemic, in that it really feels like I'm the part of a whole state. The whole state is really working together to make this happen. We are not going to address adequately wealth disparities or racial disparities in the state of Connecticut if we act as 169 individual towns. It's just not going to happen because we get into our own box and we say, well, we're taking care of it in our box. We need to understand how we can act as a state. Now, I know a lot of that doesn't have to do with the definition of home rule, because even with the definition of home rule, it's a frame of mind. And I don't know how to, don't pretend to know how to get there, but the first step is to really understand what, how we are set up, and how we have evolved, and perhaps as Mr. Porth pointed out, maybe these understandings will really lead us to be able to give us some direction on some of these larger issues that we as a tiny little box in a big country, we should be able to address as one. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah.
Scott. Yeah.
Agreed. Anyone else on this topic? Okay, so are we in agreement that maybe we should restart or reattempt the committee meeting? That maybe that's still the best framework. have individual conversations among ourselves, but perhaps the subcommittee still is the best means to accomplish this and get this off the ground.
Sure. Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Great. Okay. And before we just jump off this.
We have a frozen speaker.
Mm. We could add broadband.
You're on, Lyle.
No, I'm not frozen, but I'm saying we have the chair frozen.
Yeah.
You want me to be frozen, but he is.
I think seriously, as if you think I'm being serious here.
Okay. There we go.
Oh, there you go. He's back. We could add broadband infrastructure to our list of tasks.
Oh, there you go. I'm sorry. Was I coming off? Was I not?
You were frozen. We heard nothing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was waiting for some, smiles reaction. I don't know if you actually heard what I said, but
no.
I was taking exception to John's characterization of legislation once passed as being vague in terms of its content and meaning and intent. In my former life, that was the most important thing to me. And I think we did an excellent job of clarifying everything. Everything we passed was crystal clear.
Everything.
Absolutely. So, okay. So we'll move forward in the subcommittee and we'll plan the meeting for our regularly scheduled preset meeting, which would be May 25th. All right. So moving on, thank you for that conversation. Into 5B, we have a discussion again about the Massachusetts Department of Revenue Division and Local Services. And John, this was your, I think this was your topic as well.
And we actually had a very good discussion on this. I guess it was Wednesday at the forum with the presentation from, I'm going to forget his name now,
Ryan Miller.
Ryan Miller, who did an outstanding job of I think if his presentation could be distributed to ACIR, maybe that's already being done. He really focused in on what Massachusetts is doing in particular, that division there. And really my point of bringing it up, and there's other examples, and it goes to the ACIR study from a couple of years ago and on promote municipal shared services and the priority recommendation 3, which was to expand within OPM, the government efficiencies unit. Similar to what you see in Massachusetts and other places where you have the bandwidth, the capacity to really get out there and aggressively assist communities and promote shared and regional services and act as a resource there. OPM simply does not have the staffing and the budget to do that presently. Not that they couldn't if that were changed, but that was a central recommendation from our study a couple of years ago. And was discussed at the Wednesday forum, I routinely use that division in Massachusetts for model regulations, for examples of best management practices that they use. And also I just had raised that a couple of meetings ago as something that I still think, and the recommendation from the report was to use some of the regional performance incentive account to cover those costs at OPM so that we have the bandwidth within OPM to assist in these matters. That to me, as a COG director, is sort of critical, that we need that greater capacity. I mean, Bruce does a great job, but as he's pointed out many times, he can only spend a fraction of his time as allocated to ACIR. At one point in time, we have full-time staffing for this. At one time, OPM had a rather robust staffing, but through retirements and attrition, that went down. We had an Institute of Public Services at UConn that did great applied research, but that's pretty much, that's been gone for a while. So we have sort of the history of it, but we don't have it now. And
you know, looking, you know, the grass is always greener in Massachusetts, at least as a neighboring state has a more robust, not perfect system. But just wanted to raise that again. I still think that item three is a priority.
Yeah. And just for clarity, for those who were not at the forum on Wednesday and who may be watching today, this sort of bleeds over into item five on our agenda today, which is, item six, which is that ACIR has, mostly through Lyle's efforts in terms of coordinating with both UConn and the University of Georgia, a number of studies on different elements of what local government can do. And that those studies were begun last year, actually, with Professor Al-Qadri at UConn in particular. And on Wednesday, the first of the webinars that we anticipated holding on the outcomes of those studies was held, and I'll let Lyle sort of explain that. But as John pointed out, the one of the cornerstones of that study and those series of recommendations was to emulate what Massachusetts is doing in terms of both staffing internally in state government to enable to provide guidance to municipalities on best practices for different elements of local government. And that's when we have this item on our agenda, that's the item to which John is referring, is this Massachusetts structure that has been put in place to enable all towns and cities to be able to refer for guidance on how best to tackle different problems that come up. This is something that we at ACIR have identified, particularly in the course of the COVID reality, that new ideas, Lon had referred to this earlier too, new creative ideas have come from the local level. We should be trying to do our best to ensure that those best practices that have been formulated are not just done away with and we don't go back to the same old way of doing things post-COVID. So let's try to incorporate a lot of those best practices into future activity. But let me lead this over into item six on the agenda and ask Lyle if he could report to the group on the studies themselves.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Am I unmuted? There we go. We had 72 people register. Thank you for providing benedictory remarks on the ACIR. Ryan Miller did a report, and I guess two things. The PowerPoint is available and a recording of the entire session is available. And if that's of interest to ACIR members, we could send that out. I could ask Bruce to do that with Maura Maloney from UConn. But the core of what Ryan was saying, two parts. And again, I want to thank John for his connecting us with the Massachusetts reality. But Wisconsin, Minnesota, Massachusetts, and some other states have had a thing called best practices reviews. And basically, you had an advisory group of town officials with some state input, and they come up with a list of areas they want to improve. So stormwater management or whatever it is. And then that list is vetted further by experts and others. You come up with a list, and then you compose a working team to sort of say, here's how we're going to do, you know, tree management in parks. And that, I think, is a process that includes the local public works departments, as well as, in this case, experts from forestry and so on. So the reports in Wisconsin and Minnesota stopped there. They were done by the state auditor's office, and you have a report saying, here's how to do tree removal or tree management. What Massachusetts added to this, which I think is very powerful through initially executive action, they set aside funds to provide grants for towns to implement best practices. So if you've got a big tree problem, not only is it saying, here's a paper on how to do tree management, there's a grant to actually implement best practices related to tree management. And that has been going on for quite a number of years now. And so Ryan went through that and showed a cycle from identifying issues all the way through feedback and so forth. And he tagged ACIR as one potential body to get the ball rolling. Not that it couldn't be legislatively updated later, but at least the idea of working on this topic, he started suggested as a start on this. So I thought it was very successful. 72 people signed up. We had a reactor panel of John Filchak, John Elsesser, and Maria Capriola, right? From Simsbury, the town manager. And I thought it, and Marshall LeClaire, the chair of Prague and East Hartford town, mayor, managed this. And again, I thought it was a good start. So we will talk to Professor El Kadri about some of the remaining papers and getting those things scheduled as well. So, but again, if there's interest, you know, I'd ask Bruce to contact Maura Maloney to get the Zoom recording link and the PowerPoint. So we could, if members are interested, we could certainly send that out and you can skip through it and at least get to Ryan's presentation, which is not, is perhaps 10 to 15 minute maximum.
Great, yes, thanks, Lau. John.
Just to give an example, which I gave the other day, was I have a few towns that are interested in sharing a town administrator through the COG. And so I went to the Massachusetts website, and they have communities that have done just that in Western Mass. And how their system works is those communities reached out to the local unit that you have the link to and said, hey, we're thinking of doing this. How do we share or does it make sense to share a town administrator? They have staffing that went in, conducted an analysis to see, does it make sense? Conclusion was yes. And then they have a fund similar to the RPIP fund where they can draw on monies to kickstart it. And they've moved forward. That gave me a roadmap that we're working on now to do the same thing in my region. And that, I think, is how I sort of envision, you know, RPIP evolving similar to what I think is in 6448 now and the changes that we've instituted, at least how it should be. So that's just a real world example where you can go to their best practice list and say, you know, that looks pretty good. Let's see if we can do that. They have the researchers there that have either done it or can do it for you, and then a pool of funds to kickstart it. So we have a lot of those elements now. We're missing some of them, but we can learn from what they're doing and from some other states. So
That's what I loved about Ryan's presentation, because it does, as you've said, it does dovetail perfectly with what ACIR has already done with the Local Government of the Future initiative, and specifically that RPIP 2.0 that's now in the legislation, the governor's bill under HB 6448. Because if that goes forward, what that means is there'll be a pot of money that currently is collected off the hotel tax and the car tax that has been around for 10 years now, administered by OPM. But now that those funds will be allocated to COGS and RESCs who are undertaking these types of initiatives on behalf of their members. So that the funds are there to actually put it in place. And what Ryan's suggestion and John, you know, what you pointed out is if we also have a resource that is a roadmap for the COGS and RESCs to do these things, we can get the legal side and the administrative side of it taken care of through that type of format and the funds necessary to jumpstart it. And thanks to the work that we've already done, that's now in front of the legislature.
Yep. Can I just add one thing to that?
Yeah.
The other thing that Ryan alluded to, of course, is between Massachusetts, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, we have 50 draft reports in these areas. And obviously, local government contexts are all different. But, you know, we have some pretty good ideas. My favorite humorous point is that the first best practices review done in Minnesota was managing snow and ice. But the point is there's, almost 50 reports among these three states that are a first draft. So I think if we were going forward, if we were doing something close to these reports, maybe a good thing to have on the table. So in addition to all the mechanics, there's some content areas there in terms of a variety of issues. And they had, you know, juvenile justice prosecutions to, you know, you name it, a very broad waterfront of issues. So it might come in handy as a first draft.
Right. John Elsesser.
Thank you. A couple other things that came up and a couple of suggestions for maybe future looks. In the Massachusetts, in Ryan Miller's reports, he dug deep into something. But Massachusetts in the 80s gave money to build capacity in the communities subsidize the implementation of town administrators across the state by doing a three-year phase-out for what they call executive secretaries or town administrators across the state. And I'm trying to get through the Mass Municipal Association a copy of the report that Ryan referenced. I was aware of this program, and I believe over 40 small towns increased their administrative capacity by hiring administrators, but I need to get the numbers. But they also hired circuit riders where professional administrators would help 2 to 3 towns, which is kind of what John's trying to recreate now. So we all look at all these things that are going on, but a lot of small towns just don't have the administrative capacity to keep up and to participate. And the state has tried some models like the waste management system. They used an inclusive system this year to try to look at getting towns involved in the decision-making. We'll see how that works out because they all met and now we'll see what happens. But I think we have to look at capacity. And that raised the other issue that was discussed and it was mentioned earlier in today's meeting too, that we don't have an Institute of Public Service. And UConn is a land-grant university, and one of the charges for land-grant universities when they were given the federal money to create them was to have an Institute of Public Service to do these policy issues. And I'm not so sure the state of Connecticut made a conscious decision to get rid of the Institute of Public Service. They had somebody who was transferred from the executive director to another state agency who then retired, and the institute just went away. But they provide all the training service for municipal agencies, for assessors and town clerks and everything else to get it done right. And that's, again, to administrative capacity. So we have gone through and issue after issue kind of abandoned the idea that we should try to do things correctly and not have everybody make up their own processes and own rules. So the other opportunity is there's Rescue Act money that can be allocated if the state chose to, and the state legislature chose to build administrative capacity to make wise decisions in the future. And especially if you're doing one-time startup, why isn't that on a table anywhere? You know, we should build capacity to do good things for the future. And that's, again, another role for ACIR to say, how about a piece of that to rebuild some of the infrastructure, maybe in OPM or some other agency to do this? We're having a hard time getting 2 staff people to look at regional statewide GIS system. You know, the bill's floundering because there's 2 staff people involved. For God's sakes, if we can't use the technology that GIS brings us to make good decisions, you know, well, why bother? Just why bother pretending that we're going to move forward? So I think we need to start asking, you know, a little bit of money would go a long ways to protect the future of the state.
Amen. Thanks, John. Jim.
Yeah, I just want to say amen. I agree 100% with John's comments. They're right on. And, you know, we just keep floundering along. I think ACIR is positioned to try to delve into some of these issues, you know, and address them. And you know, I know it's easy to say, and I know, you know, here at ACIR, this ACIR group, you know, I've said it before, the ACIR group has, in my experience, been a remarkably agreeable group. We've been able to reach consensus on so many thorny issues over the years. It truly has been a great example, I think, of a state commission, you know, studying issues and actually coming up with a direction to go in that everybody agrees on. So we should take heart in that, I guess. The flip side of that is that although we have agreed as a commission, we've had very, very poor success at accomplishing the mission, so to speak. So I guess that's still my quandary at this point, is I get very frustrated trying to understand how we actually move forward to make progress. I mean, these what we're talking about today seems so straightforward and simple with regard to straight practices. You would think that all the legislators would agree, that the governor would agree, that folks at OPM would agree. You know, we can look back and say, well, it used to be we did all these, or many of these things in terms of having capacity in place to deal with these issues and move them forward. But today we don't. And so I guess that's my quandary. And so it's a very frustrating experience to hear after such a long period of time, so many of these good ideas keep coming forward. They're like waves on the shore, you know. The ideas keep rolling forward and rolling forward and rolling forward, but somehow they never mean anything. At any rate, enough.
Thanks, Jim. Well, if there's one charge that I've taken on myself as the chair of ACIR, is to reverse that trend of those waves and actually have them crash on the shore and enable them to actually start taking effect. And it is a slow process. You're right, but I think my inclination and my charge that I've defined for myself is just to reverse exactly what you're describing. So, and we've had success, you know, already in moving that ball forward. So hopefully once our legislation gets passed this year, we also start implementing some of the best practices initiatives that we're talking about today. You know, that's the foundation on which we can then build. So, but I appreciate the comment.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Thanks. John Filczyk.
I just wanted to briefly mention, because I think it's a good example of where we're losing out. If you go back just not that many years ago with geographic information systems, GIS, when that really started to evolve, the capacity that we're talking about sort of recreating at UConn and OPM and through ACIR was really at its low state. And if you look at other states, Massachusetts being one, they really took a comprehensive approach to GIS so that we had common standards, something we're only talking about now this legislative session. We've talked about it in past years, but they're taking serious action at the assembly. Other states like Arizona, Minnesota, others have been on top of this for more than a decade. So as the consequence, the towns that could afford GIS built their systems, which may or may not line up with a neighboring town. Regions built their systems, which more often than not, don't line up parcel-wise with other systems in other places. So we're playing a lot of catch-up on all of that when we could have done it once well. Now we're fixing what we did, some of it well, some of it not so well. And, you know, the governor has laid out in his response to the American Rescue Plan a very ambitious and, I think, terrific outline on GIS. And I think there's a big role in there for statewide leadership. But again, if we had that capacity a decade plus ago, we'd be in a much stronger place today than where we are.
Agreed. Thanks, John. Any other thoughts on that? I know John Elsesser was just in our chat room suggesting that we have as a agenda item in the future, inviting UConn to come speak to us about how we might reestablish that that public policy element. That makes sense. It may involve some conversations ahead of time, so we kind of, instead of it being sort of a free-form discussion that leads nowhere, we should probably have a little bit of preliminary conversations about strategies, how we could actually go about doing that, who do we need to prevail upon to make that happen, whether it's legislative or within the UConn administration itself. I think one of the things that came out at the Wednesday forum was a sense that perhaps the previous administration at UConn was unaware of their obligations that John pointed out as a land grant university, and didn't necessarily seem to think it was all that important. And I would add that as an adjunct professor at Central, I know Central Connecticut also has a unit that is designed to provide that same kind of service statewide, but also has been a little more abundant in terms of its actual implementation. So, you know, maybe we can strategize amongst ourselves a little bit about how best to approach the subject, and then invite Professor Alcadre to speak at perhaps our next meeting. But let's strategize in the meantime about that. If that makes sense. All right. Thanks for that. That was helpful. Going towards the end of our agenda today, item 7 is other matters for our consideration. Is there any are there any other comments or thoughts that beyond what we've already discussed that might fall into this agenda? Bruce?
Hi, I remembered your advice to turn my camera on when speaking, finally. I wanted to point out something that Professor Ziemering from University of Georgia had invited members of the ACIR to perhaps prepare a thing, I forget how he phrased it, whether it was a commentary article or what have you, in the Public Administration Journal he is now editing. And I just wanted to remind you of that, because we have received this invitation, but I don't believe it has gone out to all the members yet.
And yeah, I thank you for bringing that up. I'm not sure what Professor Ziemering would need from us to make that happen. Either Bruce or Lyle, do you have any insight into that?
I used to be on the board of that journal, State and Local. It's a federal, state and local legal journal in terms of it's almost exactly intergovernmental relations like ACIR. But I think you may want to either yourself as chair reach out to Professor Ziemering, or appoint a volunteer to do it so we can get more clarity. And in the meantime, I'd suggest we send out the invitation to the whole ACIR just in terms of what it was. But I think the it's necessary to get more detail. My understanding is it's a relatively short commentary on some of the work what ACIR has been doing in the last few years. It's not a sort of historic document going back to many decades ago. So that's two suggestions, I guess, is one is circulate the invitation, and then however we want to do it, is outreach to Professor Ziemering on a little more detail on, as every graduate student will ask, how long does it have to be and when do you need it?
Right.
That's the core.
Okay, well, I'll take that as a task upon myself to reach out to Professor Ziemering. And in the meantime, Bruce, if you could follow Lyle's suggestion and send that out to the rest of the membership so that they're aware of it. Thanks for bringing that up. Anything else on that item, on that agenda item? If not, if there are any other members of the public who are in attendance who would like to offer any thoughts or comments to the group, this would be the time. We welcome your participation. Okay, and seeing none, I think we have future discussion topics already covered. As far as we've built up a plate of initiatives just from this meeting alone that I think we'll we've made our plate somewhat full. So for next meetings, just as a reminder, the subcommittee meeting, which we'll be talking about the home rule planning and discussion, will be on Tuesday, May 25th at 10:30. And then our next full ACIR meeting will be Friday, June 4th at 10:30. Just as an FYI, I know I will be on vacation that week. And so my ability to join may be somewhat limited. I'll do my best, but I can't promise. But if Lyle, I'm kind of publicly telling you now that maybe if you can help me out, if I'm not able to join, if you could chair that meeting, that would be.
Mr. Chair, my only concern is we may be getting into quorum issues. You know, you may not be the only one. So that's just a concern that we may want to.
True.
Have Bruce test a quorum so that we don't have a meeting that doesn't have a quorum. Just a concern.
Yeah, that's agreed. Agreed. I mean, we can always agree to vary from the published schedule of our meetings with proper notice, and perhaps hold a special meeting a week later or at another time. So yep. That's a good thought. Yeah. All right. Any other comments before we adjourn? All right. If not, I'll take a motion for
motion to adjourn, Lyle.
And second?
Second.
Jim. Second from Jim. Thank you. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
And thank you all. This was a good conversation. We're trying to keep ourselves limited to no more than an hour and a half, which we've accomplished this month. And I appreciate that. But we've got a lot of work that we've done and a lot of work still to do. So thank you all for participating. And have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.